B-Pod Studios.
They work.
Arr, matey.
While you're at work. Scott Zolak.
I think it's a disaster.
Mark Bertrand.
I know, I want to get it out.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Josie's on a vacation far away. Come around and talk it over. So many things that I want to say. You know I like my girls a little bit older. I just want to use your love tonight. I don't want to lose your love tonight.
Time on a Friday here on Zolak and Bertrand. 617-779-0985. The phone number. If you want to hop on board, do it. Got open lines.
I'm a landscaper here. About time.
Everything from the week. Be happy to talk to you about. There's a story today from The Ringer that I think is absolutely outrageous. Well, how would you grade the position of quarterback in general in the NFL right now, Zo?
B minus, C plus.
And that takes into account every team.
Yeah, because I think it's just extremely top heavy, top 10, right? And then after that, it's a debate whether this guy could be 15 or 20. Like, do you really consider Ryan Tannehill a good starting quarterback?
No, I don't.
Like, he's one of them, okay?
I don't. And so this is why I read this story and say, oh, get out of here with this. Here's the headline on The Ringer. The NFL has more quarterbacks than it knows what to do with. How did this happen? It says as many as four quarterbacks could be taken in the first round of the draft. Cam Newton and Jameis Winston are still without a team. Suddenly, there's an oversupply of competent passers in the league. Saying something strange happened to the quarterback profession in the last decade. It says there was a shortage, and now there are too many. According to researcher Chase Stewart, the number of top quarterbacks that entered the league between 2006 and 2015 was the lowest of any decade-long stretch on record. There are currently zero 33-year-old starting quarterbacks in the league, as Stewart notes, and only two that were born in 1986. The age gap is not normal. NFL quarterbacks are typically supposed to peak around that age, and instead, it's Chase Daniel and Colt McCoy. That's who the guys are that are in that age group. Stewart has dubbed the group the missing generation of quarterbacks. But this story goes on to say there is now too many quarterbacks in the NFL, that there's too many, that there's a surplus of quarterbacks in the league. Are you buying that?
No, I'm not buying it at all. Not buying it at all. Or else you wouldn't have four going in the top rounds. You just pad rest everything else, right?
Thank
really,
you.
Other than Joe Burrow. Seriously, I'm getting tired of the, well, maybe Justin Herbert or Herbert's going to go three. Someone's going to give up a blockbuster deal to go get him at three. The drop-off from Burrow to him is so vast, it's so huge, that I would be shocked if two guys went in the first round, really, like Tua and Burrow. And I wouldn't be shocked if Herbert slid to the bottom and nobody wanted to take a chance on him. I don't know. I don't know, Beto. I just think you lack quality at the position. You really do. I mean, look at the Patriots. They're bringing Brian Hoyer back here. And that's no slight at Brian Hoyer. Look at the division that the Patriots play in. Do we really know that, or do we really think that Jared Stidham could potentially be the worst quarterback in the AFC East? He may be the best. You know, Sam Darnold may have the edge. You know, as bad as he played last year at times, I still think Darnold's a better quarterback than Allen. Who the hell's a quarterback in Miami?
Like Chase Daniel. Well, it's going to get figured out this week, I assume.
Yeah. Well, go look at the amount of money Chase Daniel has made.
They mentioned Chase Daniel. Chase Daniel, at some point, just kick him out of the league. Cut him. Well, this isn't a backup.
Hey,
these guys are not any good.
If you had such an abundance of quarterbacks, why was a guy like Josh McCown, 17 years in, kept around and be deemed valuable? You know, if you had good young quarterbacks and you were grooming guys, those guys wouldn't have jobs. They really wouldn't. I mean, come on. They talked him out of retirement. He was coaching his kids' team. Brought him out of retirement. Does that happen when you have an abundance of quarterbacks? No, it doesn't.
No, it definitely doesn't. And so I'm sorry, but I don't buy this premise that because Cam Newton and Jameis Winston are still
jobless.
Out there.
Yeah.
Maybe it's that the league has finally gotten to a point where they don't have to have these retreads for years on end. Like retread quarterbacks that stay in the league and keep jobs just because they're a quarterback.
Yeah, Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Like, yeah, well, no, I wouldn't put Ryan Fitzpatrick in that category.
Dude, look how many teams he's been on.
I could name... Yeah, but you can name a bunch of other guys who are worse than Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. No, you can't.
I'm talking bottom of the barrel, so.
Right.
I'm saying
okay.
All these guys that are on the bottom, Ryan Fitzpatrick has started for a number of teams. It's not like he stinks. He's just not one of the premier guys. But there are so many, like Colt McCoy. Is the NFL going to miss Colt McCoy if he never plays another snap?
No.
No.
Okay. I don't know if they'd miss. I don't know if they miss Alex Smith.
Here?
Really?
I love it. I love that. Obviously, that couple of years there, where it seemed like there was a shortage, has maybe spurred the next generation of there being a ton of quarterbacks. Terrific, awesome. That means the position will only get better. What if we get to a point where the position is really stock full of like really good quality guys? I think you're going to have a better league. The more good quarterbacks you have, the better your league is going to be, because you're going to have that thing that is closer to parity that the NFL has chased forever. And, I mean, a lot of people think they do a good job at it, but they clearly haven't when you got to have the best quarter. You got to have one of the premier quarterbacks to be able to win. And so the more of those guys that there are, the more equal it becomes in the league, the more, competitive the league is.
No, I like a guy like Tyrod Taylor. I think there's value to him, but should he be a bona fide starting quarterback in this league? Probably not. No. And, like, you got, Anthony Lynn out there doubling down on him, pumping his tires like he's the second coming. Like, we really love him. We're moving in a different direction. Offense is going to be better. That doesn't mean you have an abundance of quarterback play. When guys like Tyrod Taylor are taking over for a guy like Philip Rivers, who's been there forever.
Totally true.
You should have drafted a guy, and if it was so damn deep, been developing him and get the next guy ready. That's why the Patriots are going to roll with what they have. Sorry.
779-0985. If you want to read that story, it's like many things on The Ringer. It's a lot of words. So Kevin Clark wrote it on The Ringer, and it posted yesterday. The NFL has more QBs than it knows what to do with. How did this happen? It didn't happen. Cut the crap. Watch the games. There are a bunch of guys in this league that the league would not miss if they never played another snap in the NFL. So don't get caught up in the numbers. Get caught up in the quality. It's better, but it's still not top-notch. A lot of room for improvement there. Zoe gave it a C+, B- grade overall.
Top-heavy. Very top-heavy.
Top-heavy. Right.
Too many guys down at the bottom pulling that grade down. Yeah.
617-779-0985. Speaking of there being so many quarterbacks in the league, Ben Watson apparently thinks Jarrett Stidham is ready to be a quarterback. What he had to say about Stidham, and also what Tom Brady's new positional coach is saying about him. That's next. Ooh.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
First, our introduction.
Zolak. Bertrand.
Double whammy.
Zolak and Bertrand. Continues 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Ben, you've seen a lot of quarterbacks. What was your impression of Stidham, and how should Patriots feel about Stidham?
I've seen a lot of quarterbacks for sure. I've seen a lot of guys who come in with a lot of hype who didn't pan out. Seen guys who came in under the radar and turned into being superstars. Stidham has all that there needs to be for somebody who's going to be successful. He's a student of the game. You hear that a lot, but what that really means is that when we're in the meeting rooms, he's paying attention. When they're in the quarterback room, he's paying attention. When he's on the field, he's taking instructions from the coaches. He's able to disseminate information to the guys in the huddle. He's able to encourage them and kind of go through the minor details about route running, about reading coverages, all those things. And he's eager to learn, and he has a certain humility about him. With confidence. And so he had a chance to learn under arguably the greatest quarterback to play the game. And so he soaked that in for a year. Patriot fans should be confident that he wouldn't be in that room if Coach Belichick didn't think that he could help the team.
Ben Watson on Jarrett Stidham. Feels like Ben Watson is endorsing. He likes Stidham a lot. Don't you get that sense from what he has to say about Stidham?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, all he really says is he does a good job paying attention. He absorbed as much as he can. He was in the same room with Brady, and when he got out there in the field, he took the instruction from the coaches and used it to his best of his ability. I mean, I don't think he told you anything mind blowing. I like the stuff from like McCourty, where hey, we're in blitz and we're messing around practice. I come up, he's looking at me, we're laughing, he's winking. They go empty, you know, that stuff.
Yeah, but he said he's got everything. He's got everything that makes someone successful.
Yeah. Yeah, the stuff is in place there for him to do something with it, and we'll see if he can.
I just thought that all the things that he talked about was overwhelmingly positive there, saying that he had seen guys come in with a lot of hype that didn't work out, and he's also seen the other one. And I think he was sort of putting Stidham in that other group, you know, the guys that are under the radar and turn into superstars. I felt like he wasn't making – he didn't want to make a hard prediction on it, but it felt to me like he wanted to say this about Stidham. This guy's under the radar, he's a lower pick, and because he does all those things so well as a student of the game, he's got the makings of someone who turns into a star.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. There's this – I don't want to say it's spin coming from the team or teammates that you hear talk about him, but you've got a lot of pro-positive Stidham stuff as he will be the guy, and I think the assumption is he'll be the guy. And they address it, but yet Belichick always in his press conference or – talking about the season, you know, we'll do what we have to do with whoever the quarterback is. You know, he's not giving it to him or tagging him, which I kind of like. It's going to make him earn it. You know, guy before him has been here for 20 years and did it better than anybody. You know, we're not just going to hand you the keys. You're going to have to earn it. Show us you deserve it. So Bill always goes out of his way to say, you know, whoever the next quarterback is, you know, we'll plan accordingly. So even though they're trying to pump his tires, I think, you know, because there's got to be some sort of a confidence thing and just awareness from teammates and fans that, hey, this is probably going to be the next guy here.
Yeah, at this point, where do you think the Patriots are in terms of their confidence as to who the starting quarterback is going to be week one? I'm not asking you who it is, but what level of confidence do they have that they know who that guy is going to be?
See, there's a lot of writers, and I think people around that are cover the team think that, you know, Hoyer can be that guy in week one. And eventually it'll be Stidham's time. But the fact they went out and brought Brian Hoyer back tells me they have great confidence in Stidham.
If you're Bill Belichick and you're Josh McDaniels right now and you're getting set to draft right now, are they 100% confident they know? I'm not asking you who the quarterback is, whether it's going to be. Do they know who the quarterback is week one right now?
I think they do. Barring an awful
injury or
camp or games. Yeah.
Right. Bad camp, injury, or something crazy happening in the draft and somebody becoming available that they didn't think would be there. But right now, would you say they're 90% certain as to who their quarterback is week one?
I kind of am, yes.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Now.
Because we're going to get to the draft and there's going to be rumors about sliding up to go get one of these guys if they fall there and they're available. So. See, I think, you know, if free agency started or they made a trade for a guy, you know, like an Andy Dalton, then that would tell me, yeah, they don't really believe in Stidham yet.
Yes.
Now, like, they know what they have in Hoyer. They know what his ceiling is. I'm bringing him in to help coach the kid up.
Are you also, would you have the same level of certainty in saying that week one guy is Hoyer and not Stidham or someone else that they might pick up between now and then?
I think I'd be shocked. I'd be shocked if it's Hoyer or... Now, if they go out and get Cam Newton, you know what I mean? That means that they were definitely interested in him. They bring him in. It's going to be hard to have Cam sit on the bench here, right? Or he wouldn't have any interest to come here if he wasn't going to play. You know, you play as long as he did and have that size, and you know, and if you're healthy and things look right, you're not coming here to back up Jarrett Stidham.
But that's kind of my point. I mean, there's like so much
it depends
in flux
who they
right
get
now.
Hard.
So
you
think they're 90% sure they know who the week one guy is? Do you know who that guy is?
Yeah.
Who is it?
It's going to be Stidham.
Okay.
Okay, so here's what's going to happen. They're not going to trade up to get Tua. They're not going to trade up to get Herbert. And I don't think Herbert's going to slide back far enough to where they look at it and say, wow, look at the value. We got top 10 grade on this quarterback. We might as well take him. You know, he's there. If they go and draft a guy like day two, and like fourth round, I'm talking third round, developmental type stuff. That doesn't tell me that they don't believe in Stidham. That tells me they believe in Stidham. Okay, so you got him, you got your veteran backup and Brian Hoyer, who they told come here and compete for the starting job. I'd love to hear that discussion, how that went down. Because nobody's really given that any legs whatsoever. Like, oh, he's going to compete. We're going to see. You're going to split half the reps. He's going to get half the reps. You know, you'll be able to tell day one practice down there, if we're allowed to be down there.
Right, good point.
I'm talking walkthroughs up top where I got the binoculars and I'm watching, and you know, you can tell who they're giving all the reps to, just based on personnel groupings and who they're paired up with. Go get a damn tight end. They have so many freaking holes on offense and a couple on defense where you lost some guys. You guys talked about the veterans they've lost on defense. You're really going to give up draft collateral and slide up to get Tua? And is he that much better than Stidham?
I sure as hell hope not. No, I mean, right now for this season, no. But
people are talking about him as a franchise guy, Tua. Yeah,
yeah. I wouldn't take the risk.
I'm out.
You know,
Jim's
totally healthy. He might be, but I don't like short quarterbacks, and I don't like quarterbacks with a laundry list of injuries.
Well, Mr. Louth,
thank you,
Mr. Louth, who has that big binder, was out on
binder
Tua.
Louth.
He was always in on Tua. Then he got hurt, and he kind of pumped the brakes on that one. But Louth's back in.
I saw him in person. I pumped the brakes. Yeah. Okay. I saw him in person.
He's pumping brakes again.
So you
I saw
think
him work
he grew.
Out. I saw him work out. It looks like he can move well. No? My whole thing was the injury. Is the injury going to prevent him from being a good quarterback? I saw him move around. It looks pretty good. I don't have any doubt about his accuracy.
Yeah. I think it's a risky pick. I think it's a big-time risky pick.
I saw one proposal. The Patriots trade 3 first-rounders they would take to get up to number 3.
So yeah,
and then 2 more.
Yeah, and we had Lee Steinberg
on with us.
We had Lee Steinberg, the former big quarterback agent, on with us down at the Super Bowl, and he's got Mahomes, the Steinberg, and now he's got Tua. Like, he's starting to get back into this. You know, I got the top quarterbacks in college football coming out. He's doing a good job getting, you know, his job and his life back together, because he hit rock bottom here for a while. But, you know, it's a resurgence for him. So he's got Tua, too. So, and he's not letting them, you know, work out or guys see him. I think they're very selective as to what video they put out there.
No, they put the whole workout out there.
They
released the whole workout that was released to NFL teams was the video that Mortensen tweeted out. There's like 8 straight tweets of Mortensen tweeting the videos in sections of all of his throws. It was every one of his throws. A couple of bad throws. They didn't just show all good throws.
Yeah. But I'm talking from a medical standpoint, Jim. Like, I think Lee's going to protect his kid as much as he can prior to the draft. You know, not seeing doctors.
Oh, yeah, no,
not
team's not going to get to see him or get the medicals and stuff. They're going to get the medicals that are provided from the combine or whatever. But just watching him move on tape, I mean, from a guy that just dislocated his hip, it looked pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's see how it looks when all of a sudden someone puts a helmet into that hip.
Yeah.
See how
Lawrence Guy fall.
Then.
Lawrence Guy fall.
Yeah.
Hip. See how
I mean,
it feels.
It's all great now, but... The
Jadeveon Clowney. Yeah.
What do you think? It's a more of a risk than when he started? Like, there's more of a risk to re-injure now?
No,
is that
I
what
just.
Yeah, I think that's possible. Yes.
See, I think Beadle's more with the injury part of it and the size. I'm just like the overall watching him. I think he's like Tebow.
Him as a quarterback. You've never liked him.
No, Jim, I've never liked him. I respect what he did. Like, he's not my style. Like, he's a product of how good Alabama is, too, I think. All those good defenses, all those good speed guys.
There was a thing on, you know, that show Detail that Kobe Bryant created for ESPN, and then Peyton Manning did a few of those episodes. Nick Saban did a breakdown of Tua, knowing the plays that were called and knowing the reads, and it's about a 15-minute thing on ESPN Plus. That helped me, like, get back into being behind Tua and going and saying this guy is going to be the guy. He did one for Burrow and he did one for Tua, and Tua, like, reading defenses. That's the stuff that you don't see. But Saban breaking it down and saying, well, this looks like a long touchdown pass, but this was the fourth option on this play. And he shows him and the progression of reads. And it's like, all right, he gets it. And he's an under-center guy. He can go back. It's not like he's a shotgun guy. There's a lot of reasons to like him.
You know, gun to my head, I would take him over Herbert. I would take him over Herbert.
Jim, do you think that re-injury is not a possibility for him?
I don't know. I don't know if it's he's back to normal and he's just like everybody else as far as re-injuring like that. I think his style of play could maybe lead to re-injury, but I don't know if the hip injury is something that could be like, you know, something that could happen again. I don't know. Is that a one-time thing, or is that something that just keeps popping out? I don't think we've seen it enough to know, do we?
And you can't try it either. It's not like they're going to say, hey, let's see if we can put some pressure on his hip joint. You know, let's simulate some hits for you to take here so you're not gun-shy. That kid will be gun-shy first time he gets outside the pocket. He has to be.
We were going to tell you about Byron Leftwich and what he said about Tom Brady, because Tom Brady is now the quarterback that Byron Leftwich will be coaching this season, which is hysterical.
I just can't even discuss this.
Why not?
It's just so ass backwards, upside down. I go play for coach drinking paint, and Byron Leftwich is my quarterback coach.
Well, no, I'll tell you quickly, Byron Leftwich. Because this was not Byron Leftwich that revealed it, but Ben Roethlisberger revealed it in an interview that he did on Sirius.
Yep.
He said, I was excited for Brady because I knew that he was going to play for Arians, and he's going to enjoy the heck out of that because he was fun to play for. That's what Roethlisberger said. Yay, fun. He says, Byron Leftwich, I texted Byron, and he said, and I said, hey, don't screw it up. And he said, all I got to do is get out of the way. It's going to be good for him. I'm excited for all of them. So Byron Leftwich told Ben Roethlisberger, I just got to get out of the way. I'm going to step aside, which tells me Byron Leftwich is a
not
smart
very good.
Man.
Or
he's
not
smart
very good.
Enough to know what he doesn't know. And that, to me, is a quality that I respect. So he's like, you know what? I'm going to get out of the way, help where I can, let Brady do his thing.
So he was there last year. He was there last year, correct?
Yes, that is a smart move by Leftwich, because if Leftwich plays his cards right,
yeah,
he's going to come out of this the next couple of years looking great, and he's going to be able to advance his coaching career, having been officially the coach of Tom Brady.
Could you imagine, like, one of the first meetings when they start doing install, and they start talking about schemes and protections, and that Brady starts to talk like he did on that set of the NFL, you know, Top 100, where he's talking about protections and pulling guards depending upon what the front is. You think Byron Leftwich ever had those type of discussions with Jameis? Like, that's where he's going to get blown away. Leftwich played at a pretty high level in this league. Yeah, but,
yeah,
like,
but
when's he going to be, like, wild or just like, oh, boy, I'm in over my head here. You know?
Yeah, Brady's had three offensive coordinators. They became the head coach of Notre Dame, the head coach of the Broncos, and the head coach of Penn State and the Texans. Those are his three offensive coordinators.
That's a great point.
It's the ultimate risk-reward move, because if you do nothing and he succeeds, you'll still get credit for being a part of it.
Yes,
but if
exactly.
You do nothing. If you do nothing and it looks like an anemic offense, they're going to say, huh, well, Brady's still good and everything, but apparently he needed a real coordinator and a real coach to help him reach that level, and he didn't have it once he left New England.
I bet option two would be Brady looks old. I bet Brady would get blamed for being old before they even get to Byron Leftwich. Leftwich might be like third on the list.
Yeah, but he's going to be on the list. And so
sure.
But
if you're him, what would you put your money on?
Brady getting out
good.
Of the way.
Yeah, getting the hell out of the way. Brady's going to be pretty good.
GFO. GTFO.
I think that he would be smart to not only get out of the way, but do what Zoe is describing, which is absorb everything he could possibly take from Brady's knowledge of running an offense, is what he should do.
It's going to be a lot of good idea, Tom. Good idea,
great
Tom.
Great idea, Tom.
Oh,
great
I like
idea,
that.
Great idea.
Let me talk to Bruce about that. I like that one.
Let's
too.
Run with that, Tom. That's a good idea.
Nice. If I'm Byron Leftwich, I'm saying to Tom Brady, hey, Tom, you know those binders in Tom versus Time? You mind bringing those in? Maybe we should leave those here at the office. And then late at night, Byron Leftwich is going to sit there and study 20 years worth of Tom Brady offenses and then be a better coach for it at the end. Yes, Byron Leftwich can have his coaching career be helped by who he's about to coach. And so
you would think
He knows. He knows. Get the hell out of the way. Let this guy do his thing. Coming up next, in addition to at 12:50, we're going to get to a couple of golf items, which we believe will be the first sport to return.
All right, Hardy.
On June 11th. Hardy's got some items he wants to get to on the golf front. Happy to do that.
When's the golf show resume, if that's the case, Hardy?
My guess would be the weekend of June 11th.
All right.
also coming up, Ty Law on a podcast with a story about an old house of Zoe's.
Jesus. 9 Cherrywood Lane.
What's next?
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Everybody, it's the moment you've been waiting for.
Hot takes.
Well, you can clearly see there's a gap where the tip digs in and then boom, it pops up.
Oh, yeah. Zoe and Beetle.
98.5, the sports up.
At the time, it was no Gillette Stadium. It was no Patriot Place. It was cold benches. It was the end zone. Hell, I even lived there for the first 3-4 months because that damn Scott Zolak, he sold me the house but didn't move out yet, so I didn't bought his house, but I'm standing in the end zone. Because he waited for his house to be built. So that first experience in New England wasn't great, but, you know, I was able to take care and provide for my family.
You mentioned Scott Zolak in the house. Mm-hmm. Now, you actually got the house from Zolak, and you moved the house on. I don't know if people know this story. Mm-hmm. You lived there. You hooked it up. And then what happened? When you got a nice little contract. You got a nice
Yeah. So,
what happened?
Well, unlike Scott, I passed it down. Scott charged the hell out of me.
It's Ty Law with Michael Hawley on a podcast on NBCSportsBoston.com. What did he expect? You were going to give him the house for free?
He has a tough time. Okay, so great kid. Grew up in Aliquippa, right? Pittsburgh, where I'm from. Went to Michigan, came out early. So he wants to buy my condo. So we agreed upon a price, which I did make it a little bit of money. I like made like $7,000 on him. Yeah, like I took him to the woodshed.
You basically sold it at cost. I mean, you're talking about covering your expenses on closing costs, for crying out loud.
What are we doing, pal? Right. I go, here's the thing, pal. I want to move into this house and rent the one we're in now, but it was like halfway through being built. I can't move out until that house is done. So my condo was sold with the contingency of me being in my house at that time.
Okay.
And he kept getting madder and madder and pushing and pushing. And then finally I said, okay, let's go. So I convinced the builder of this house to allow me to store everything in the garage, down in the garage and lock it up.
Okay.
Which was somewhat risky, right? Because Ty kept complaining. See, Ty wanted to bring his mom up too. So she came up. Man, he put down some big-ass red shag rugs. He pimped that place out. Big sound system downstairs. Them damn neighbors. They got it. They got it good. I got even with those suckers. I had these two old neighbors that lived on it. They called the cops every day at 7 o'clock because the music or TV was on too loud.
So he's actually going to cover that in what he talks about.
Oh, he
is? To play. But I just want to ask you a question before he gets into this. Were you the first Patriots player to own this property?
There? Yes.
Okay, so you bought it from someone else who just happened to live there or from the builder? What happened
correct.
There?
Correct. I bought it from a previous owner.
Okay,
very
so
nice
a previous
condo.
Owner yes. who extremely had nothing nice to condo. Do with football.
Correct. Okay. Now, Ray Agnew, defensive tackle from NC State, Leonard Russell, running back my year, Ben Coates, all lived in another complex next to me. In all the right. same condo setup, but all that's right. how so I found out about it.
This is important to note because there's going to be more on all of this. So let's continue good. Again from the Michael Hawley podcast, NBC Sports Boston.
Oh, real
it's
quick,
Ty Law.
Real quick, too. Yeah. Don't start planning it yet. So we agree upon the price. So Ty gets out his checkbook, starts writing a check. I'm like, no, you want to get a mortgage, you want to establish credit because you want that mortgage. You don't want to give me that whole thing right there. Don't want
to. You
want
to cut you a check?
Yeah.
Just pay it to you.
Yeah.
No paperwork. Just
no
here.
Paperwork. Just here's your check. Give me the key. Yeah.
Oh, God. All right, here it is. There's
I love
more
it.
From
I love it. Go ahead.
So, what happened?
Well, unlike Scott, I passed it down. Scott charged the hell out of me. You know what I mean? But I'm young going there. I like the place. Okay, can't wait to go in. So by the time I got there and moved in, you know, I finished the basement, put some money into it, and, you know, made it my own. So when I got the contract, you know, It was a young kid by the name of Tom Brady. He was a Michigan guy. So I was like, you know, you try to do what you can to take him up in the league. Because we didn't play together at college. But being that he came from Michigan, hey, man, I'm going to do my part to try to welcome him in. So, you know, he wasn't making, great money at the time. And He was looking for a place. So what I did, because I just signed a contract, I said, hey, just come on, man, and I'll hook you up with this. And I finished the basement. And at the time, you know, I took about a $125,000 haircut just to give to him. But the other key was I left all the TVs, the pool table, the furniture, everything. So basically it's move-in ready. He wasn't making no money. You know what I mean? And now, man, I probably could put my whole house in his kitchen. You know what I mean? But that's how it worked. But it was like, man, I did, you know. And then Rohan Davey told me, he came, you know, and said, hey, didn't you sell Tom the house with all the SAT in it? I'm like, yeah, well, he said, well, when he sold it to me, he took everything. So Tom didn't pass it back down. I don't know what he did with it, but he didn't pass it back down. So
the first flip Brady did.
What a humanitarian, huh?
Was the condo in what town is that in?
Franklin.
He flipped the condo in Franklin. Now he's talking about Brady flipping properties on Comm Ave or in New York City. Nope. The first thing he flipped was the condo that was originally Zoe's down in Franklin.
He lived with a tight end, too. I forget who the hell he lived with.
Rod Rutledge. I don't know.
No, hell no. Can't live with Rod Rutledge. That dude's crazy.
I'm just throwing a name.
So Ty took a bath. He took a massive bath on that
he
condo.
He gave him $125,000 discount?
He may have.
Why did he do that?
I don't know. That's just dumb. No. Hell yeah.
You know Brady didn't do that.
I don't know
Brady
how he
cutthroat.
See, the basement was tight. I don't know how he finished that damn basement because they had like low ceilings.
Yeah.
Like I would have thought of doing it. I did it here at my house because I could at least stand up and get 9-foot ceilings. It was like seven-foot ceilings down there.
You get 9-foot ceilings in your basement, huh?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's nice.
I hit my head.
Brady took the pool table.
How did he get the freaking pool table out of there?
He paid someone to move it.
Yeah.
So the conversation between Rohan, I'm just picturing the conversation between Rohan Davey and Ty Law. You know how cheap that guy is? He took the TVs, he took the pool table, he took everything out of there.
Stripped it down.
Yeah, he took all his crap with him.
He took That's all Ty unreal. Law's crap with him.
Yeah, he took all the crap that Ty Law gave him. Brady took it out of there with him. He moved it all out. Wow. Wow, that's funny. But Ty's apparently upset with you for not wanting to pass it down to him and give him a discount.
He's just telling stories.
I mean, you should pass it down to him. He's a first-round pick. He probably doesn't have much money, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure he had no money at all. Right. Back when first-round picks got paid right
no
out
cap,
of the gate.
No rookie cap.
Coming into the league.
And what's wrong with living at the end zone for a couple months? Like, give me a break, Ty.
I thought he said Izzo at first. I'm like, Izzo wasn't on the team yet. And then he got, oh, no, he said end zone.
End zone. Yeah.
Yeah, the end zone.
They had a good sports bar downstairs. Yeah. Good chicken wings.
All right. 617-779-0985. Some golf items from Hardy that he wanted to get to. Let's do that. We'll do it next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Now it's time for more of Zolak and Bertrand.
That's what you put in your mouth in the morning.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
We miss our baseball. This is baseball season right here. Rob Manfred, thank you very much. NFL, Roger Goodell. Thank you, Roger. UFC, Dana White. Great Dana White. PGA, Jay Moynihan.
A little golf talk here as we think golf might be the first thing back at the start of June.
Yeah.
What do you got on your mind there, Hardy? What's going on?
Yeah, you know, with missing out on the Masters and, you know, Zoe has always said that he only watches when Tiger's playing.
Right.
And I think you speak for a lot of people. And got into this debate again last
serious?
Year.
You being serious or no?
Yes, yes. Okay, you only watch when Tiger's playing, right?
Or like Phil. Like, it's got to be one of those big names in it. I cannot watch Spieth. I can't watch him.
I'm glad you brought up the big names. You know, the big names, the ones, you know, the real stars here, because, you know, this debate started again last year after Tiger Woods won the Masters, and it was his 15th, but he still trails Jack Nicklaus by 3.
How were those ratings that year, Hardy? Pretty good, weren't they?
They were pretty good. Yeah. They were pretty good. And, you know, golf is better for Tiger, and everyone agrees with that, and a lot of people don't like him personally. But the debate was, you know, who is the greatest? You know, we're talking about GOATs all the time, you know, with Tom Brady, and we're going to be watching Michael Jordan, presumably. We'll all be watching that that 10-part series when it starts on Sunday. We love to have the conversation about who the greatest, who the best ever was. And, you know, the conversation started up again after Tiger won the Masters last year. And tied Sam Snead for the most number of wins ever. But some people will still point to Jack Nicklaus and his 18 major victories, and the fact that they just feel Jack was better in his prime, had better competition. This is the argument that Felger makes, and it's a good one, that the competition, you know, that Jack had and his number of runners up that he had, you know, he had finished second 19 times in major tournaments. And it got me thinking when I was watching the other night on the Golf Channel, this history of Jack Nicklaus. And the guy was amazing, right? And before Tiger Woods, there was no question in my mind to who the greatest golfer of all time was. It was Jack. And Jack also has a big help in the argument because people just like him better, you know?
Yeah,
He is and was the ultimate family man. You know, this guy never missed a game, you know, like your dad, so.
Didn't miss
games, didn't miss practice. Yeah, he would fly home from the other side of the country to watch a football game, you know, and people like that. But if we're keeping it to golf, and you really look inside the numbers, so after I watched this thing on Jack, because number one, I got a chance to meet him and do an interview with a few other people a few years ago at one of his charitable events. And Jack comes across in person and in this interview and in long settings very much like Tiger, you know, very, you know, arrogant, very sure of himself. And it's off-putting to a lot of people. But what do you expect when you are the greatest to ever do something? You know, I don't know how you remain humble when you're Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, or Jack Nicklaus. So, you know, in terms of the personality department, yeah, he never did the things that Tiger did outside of his marriage that we know of. So he earns points there. But from an actual, like, prickliness standpoint, they're a lot closer than you think.
Oh, yeah.
And then this other one that always stuck in my craw, that Felger would always bring up, and he always talks about it, and is the fact that Jack had to beat the best of the best, right? He was, you know, it was always him or Arnold Palmer, or him and Tom Watson.
Yeah,
or
Tom
him
Kite.
And Lee Trevino. You know, the standouts, the luminaries, the, you know, the true best of the best. And that's who Jack was beating, and that's who he was finishing runner-up to. And it's a hell of a story, especially when you look at some of the guys that Tiger, you know, and he did, you know, a lot of people don't think of Tiger's contemporaries, whether it's Rory McIlroy or Brooks Koepka or, you know, Phil Mickelson. I think all those guys are great. But, you know, in the argument there, it's not the same as having to play and beat Tom Watson and Lee Trevino and Arnold Palmer again and again and again. So I went back and I looked at a bunch of Jack's major championships that he not only won or that he finished runner-up in. And when you do that, it's a much different story. Because while Jack did lose to Arnold Palmer a number of times, and he lost to Tom Watson, he finished runner-up in the British Open a number of times, some of the tournaments that he won, he didn't beat what you would consider to be the best of the best. Now, these are all very good golfers, but let me tell you, how much does it impress you to find out that when Jack won the Masters in 1966, the runner-up was Tommy Jacobs? And when he did it again in 72, he beat Bruce Crampton and Bobby Mitchell.
Who?
Exactly. Bruce Crampton pops up on this list a lot. I don't know from Bruce Crampton. Sounds like a hell of a player, but he ain't Tom Watson, and he ain't Arnold Palmer, and he's not Lee Trevino.
Yeah.
You know, when he lost the British Open in 64, he lost to Tony Lima. Now, Tony Lima is a guy that golfers know. But again, he's not one of these guys that people love to point to when they're saying, Jack, it was always a 1-2 punch with him and Tom Watson and Arnold Palmer. No, it wasn't. You know, in 66, when he won the British, he beat Doug Sanders and Dave Thomas. And then the next year, he lost to Robert DiVincenzo. You know, he beat Doug Sanders again in 1970 and Dave Ragan at the PGA Championship in 63. And when he lost it in 64, he didn't lose the PGA Championship to Arnold Palmer. He lost it to somebody named Bobby Nichols.
Dave Thomas guy. Didn't he lose Wendy's?
Yes. He lost it to Dave Marr the next year. So don't tell me that Jack Nicklaus only beat and only lost to Tom Watson, Arnold Palmer, and Lee Trevino, because for every one of those, I can name you three Bruce Cramptons, Andy Beans, and Doug Sanders. And these are all good players, but the argument falls apart when you're talking about the contemporaries of Jack versus the contemporaries of Tiger. There are a million stats that you can look at when you're doing something like this. You can look at win percentage. You can look at the number of strokes these guys win their major championships by. There's a number of different ways to look at it. And a lot of guys like Gary Player says, it's ridiculous to compare golfers from different eras anyway. Don't even try it. But if you're going to do it, make sure you got your facts straight before you start rattling off how Jack only beat and only lost to the best of the best. Because taking 5 minutes to research the subject, you come up with a bunch of names that, while they were very good, they're not the guys you think about. When you think about Jack Nicklaus competing.
That's
Jags. They're not Jags.
Did Felger do this recently or something?
No, that's his golf take
on Tiger.
I know he said it in the past. I didn't know if he had done it this week or something that had you fired up about it to go and do the research.
No, I did it after I watched Jack Nicklaus, the special on the Golf Channel. And I got to tell you, I still think it's Tiger, but it's so close. You know, and part of it is the era. You know, it's just a few years difference between me and Felger, but he was probably watching Jack a little more closely than I was because I was just too young. You know,
a little shot at Felger for being an old man too.
No, but
I like,
but
I like what you're doing there.
It's literally a couple of years. It's like Zoe remembers a couple of TV shows that I don't, just by a couple of years, right?
Yep. It's that window. That's right.
It's that weird.
Is Felger our oldest host? Is that what you're saying? He's the oldest host we have?
I don't know. I think that's
who's older, Zoe or Felger?
I think it's I think Maz has them both.
Maz? What about Fred?
Oh, Maz is older than Felger? I forget. I always forget these things.
Hold Fred, 64.
It's a hell of an argument, though. And watching Jack Nicklaus, I mean, the shots that he hit and the things that he did, other guys couldn't do that. You know, they say a lot of the same things. His, you know, the guys he was beating back in the day say the exact same things that the guys were saying about Tiger. It's like when he showed up, you know, if he's playing his best, I can't beat him. And that holds true for both Jack and Tiger.
Hardy's going to have a better weekend now that he was able to do this.
That was like the Sports Hub Golf Minute.
Right, yeah, there. I mean, this could have been an entire golf show that you just did.
Yeah, well, we just lost the entire audience, but it also helped.
That's okay.
4 minutes. So, you know, now we can focus in on our last hour of broadcasting for the week.
All right, then.
Just reiterated, too, how much golf lacks stars as we talk about it with baseball.
I got something.
I don't think golf has big stars.
Maybe we can deliver right here in headlines. Because I consider this breaking news and breaking research, Hardy.
Oh.
Would you like me to contribute it to your headlines?
Oh, yeah. You want to just pop in?
Yeah,
go ahead,
yeah,
Chewbacca.
Let's just do that. Let's do headlines. Okay. I'll join in.
All right, good.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.